freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? Yeah. Give me one more screen.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
He did it!
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Good morning to you, buddy. Hope everything's good.
Good morning, sweetie.
God, I missed you yesterday. I missed being on. Listened to quite a bit of the show. It was awesome to hear you guys. It was fun.
Tom Wassel making waves.
There's no one quite like Tom.
I figured it out, by the way, because many folks have asked about it, including the great Art Teal, who, by the way, 7'6", so he's never had a height issue right after the show yesterday. I think part of the problem is that it's a little chilly down here. There's a little onshore flow here at the VMAC, and yesterday Tom didn't realize, oh, that's right, we're going to be outside. So all he had on was a T-shirt, and then when I gave him my, like, XL tall, you know, kind of pullover thing, it was just hanging on him all day. So I think that kind of played into the psychosis yesterday.
Poor Tom.
Tough
breaks.
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Brock,
he was terrific.
I watched that game yesterday, and to call it the biggest of the season, I don't think is an exaggeration in any way, shape, or form. But with 40 games left, I sure felt like that saved the season yesterday, man. You get shut out and swept by your competition for the wild card.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you come back out of that hole. It might just be just too big an emotional hole. But instead, you find a way. D. Gordon hits his huge home run. By the way, I think D. Gordon can hit a home run whenever he wants. He's like Ichiro.
Petit, right? His first pitch. Swung on a club high and deep to right field. Back on it, Piscotty. He looks up. It is gone. D. Gordon, a two-run home run, has broken the scoreless tie here in the 12th inning.
He can hit a home run whenever he wants. He's like Ichiro. All of his home runs are like to put his team ahead after the seventh or after his friend had passed away. Don't you think he can hit a home run whenever he wants?
Right. I got some peanut brittle back here. Right.
The last of the peanut brittle.
Yeah.
So you don't believe that?
I don't quite believe that. I don't know if it was the double-double he had for breakfast that he told Jim Mueller afterwards. But my goodness, did the team ever need that? Yeah, I think you wake up today. You have an off day. Hopefully some moves coming. And, you know, you wake up and you're 2.5 back, not 4.5 back. And with 40 games to go, you're 4.5 games back after just getting swept, you know, against arguably the best and certainly the hottest team in baseball versus 2.5. And you've still got 7 more against them. You know, even if you lost and you're 4.5 back, I think you rationalize and say, hey, we still got 7 games against these guys. 4 down there, 3 back up here in late September. You can spin a story. 2.5 back, you're right there.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
are right on the
verge. And I think you needed to show yourself that you could beat them, this new version of them. Not the version we saw early this year that wasn't good, but this new win-every-single-day version of the Oakland A's. You need to beat them. You need to keep everybody in your sights, and they get that done. But I come out of this thinking, Brock, and maybe some of it has to do with your little back and forth tete to tete with Jeff Passan here.
Uh-huh.
You mess with the bull, you get the horns.
That's
dude.
Okay. Let's go.
I'm just saying.
I'll call him Jeffrey. I don't know. You don't even know what's next.
You mess with the bull, there's a decent chance you get the horns.
Sure.
So for those of you who aren't following Brock and Jeff Passan on Twitter, Brock writes yesterday, "Hey Jeff Passan, Eddie Diaz says hello."
Yippity freaking doodah, Brock.
# Cy Young and MVP consideration. So the great Jeff Passan writes
yippity
back.
Yippity frickin' doodah, Brock.
Yippity doodah, they're in no race.
He writes back to you and says, "Don't make me remind you of the time you considered the team Eddie Diaz pitches for dead, Brock, or remind you that it was an hour before you sent this tweet."
Yeah, what'd I send?
You would send 0-0 for 8, RISP, runners in scoring position. RIP,
rest in peace.
Too bad.
Too bad, yeah. Yeah, that's not giving up on the team.
What are you talking about?
It was just that game.
You said RIP.
Rest in peace. Yeah, that game was over. I went outside.
Well, RIP doesn't mean the game is over. RIP
means the team is dead.
Well,
also, you were still wrong about that, too, and doubting.
Sure.
So.
Sure. No, I certainly doubted yesterday.
And to sit here and write back, oh, no, Jeffrey, that was the game, not the team nor the season.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Brock, I don't know where you get off.
Don't you dare take wet blanket side, even if I am
Brock,
wrong.
You
Salt.
Know I have gotten Salt. Your back before.
Thank you.
We literally, Kyle and I found the show sheet this morning from when Jim Mora savagely attacked you.
Salk, I have to carry you and have your back every day. You better have mine today.
Brock.
Yes.
A baseball season's about faith. There's nothing like the faith it takes to get through an entire baseball season. It's unlike anything else. Football season, you 16 games.
This is very rich coming from you.
Brock, I'm just trying to explain to you what it's like to be a baseball fan. If you don't want to understand, if you choose not to understand, that is on you.
Do I even need to pull out the text and read what you texted the group?
I don't mean to be like Mr. Doomsday or anything.
Brock, what you text is very different from what you write publicly. It's a major difference. Texts are for private use. That's like your inner dialogue.
No place to start, man.
That's your inner dialogue, your inner monologue. It's like what's going on in your head of sure. Like, I'm mad and I'm frustrated and baseball tests your faith. Once you put it publicly on Twitter, right. You've committed to
sure.
it. You committed to the RIV.
Oh, yeah, I committed. That game was done in my mind. After old Nelly, after man on third and less than two outs there, I was done. I'll tell you, I was done. I chatted with Tom Tolbert on his radio show, and I thought for sure after that interview, hey, I'd come in, the game was over.
Quiet. Is it too much to ask you to have a little bit of faith, Brock? Is it too much to ask everybody around to have a little bit of faith? So what if it's 0-0 in the 11th and Nelson Cruz is striking out like a bum? Men on first and third. You gotta have a little faith in a baseball season. They take a while. And if you don't believe me, Brock, yes. don't make me do this.
What?
Because I'll do it. I'll do it this morning if I have to. If I have to do it to get the people going.
Oh, no, you won't.
Yes, I will. And no silly George Michael version. We're gonna crank up some Limp Bizkit, man. Fred Durst and his backwards red hat in the house. Don't you shake your head at me, Lydia.
Why couldn't you just do George? Like, come on.
Yeah. Why?
I just have to be Fred.
Good, for a very important reason. You'll hear it here in a minute.
Well,
not for this. This is fine. This is like just how you start faith, right? Did you guys have faith yesterday? 710-710, powered by Coors Light.
Nope.
Nope. Because you need some of this, Lydia. Crank this up for a minute. Come on. Make it loud. Let's go. I'm showing you that door. Rock, gotta have faith. Gotta have faith. Because if you want to root for the Mariners over the course of 162, you don't have to have faith. You gotta have faith. Like, it's a major difference. That's all I'm saying.
I'm muting this. Okay. Right.
You got the George Michael version?
Why, so Lydia can be happy?
Sure.
Yeah, but this isn't what you need to get through a Mariners. This is what Lydia has to get through a Mariners season.
This is kind of like constantly playing in my head.
Lydia actually has faith. Oh, Mike Zunino is good. He struck out 34 times in a row, and Mike Zunino is good.
Did you see his walk in the 12th?
When Mike D. Gordon has a 3-second interview with Jim Mueller, Lydia says it's great. I loved that. It's so cool.
Because
you don't deserve
asked,
D. Gordon.
What was your reaction? What was your reaction to that? Cool.
That's not a great interview.
Oh, it's great to me.
No, it's not.
It was great to me.
Lydia hears the George Michael song in her head as she's watching and paying attention to the Mariners. I hear the other one. Go ahead, sing
sounds
it,
like
Lydia.
A you problem, not a me problem. I do have faith, so I don't gotta have it. I just do have it.
You knew D. Gordon was going to hit a home run yesterday, too, didn't you, Lydia?
She had faith.
You knew that he was going to turn that sucker around, and he's just been unlucky, as he would tell you. That he doesn't like on-base percentage, and he didn't want to be on base at that time.
Nope.
He just wanted to hit a dinger.
That's exactly right. Some text coming in this morning. Yes, I have faith. Thank you for the Limp Bizkit. I had zero faith. I was with Brock 100%. I can't tell if Zunino is batting 199 or if it's Salk because they're identical twins. That's a fair point. You got to have hair to rock out like that, Salk. Well, Fred Durst didn't have the hair.
Mm.
He just had the backwards red cap, which was enough, man. Mm. That's all you needed those days. So that's where we're at. You got to have some faith, Brock. And even better news for the Mariners after a huge win yesterday. Maybe they're starting to get a couple of their guys back to form. If Nick Vincent's going to pitch like that, if James Pazos can come up with a couple more big strikeouts, those are the things. They need somebody they can count on beyond Diaz and Colomé, right? And if
yes.
it's going to be Pazos and Vincent, fine. But it's going to have to be somebody, because as you sit here with 40 games left to play, a quarter of the season, yep. Scott Servais has to have some options he can count on late.
Yeah, he does. And Eddie Diaz is sure absolutely 100% filthy. I mean, that was just strikeout, 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 and that's what he's going to have to do. If he's legitimately going to get into that Cy Young conversation or MVP conversation, it's not just going to be about getting an absurd number of saves, which I hope he gets opportunities to. He's got to do it in the most dominant fashion we've seen, and that's exactly the script that he's writing this season.
7-10, time for Need to Know.
Yippity freaking doodah, Brock.
Need to Know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, Mariners and A's took a 0-0 tie into the 12th inning yesterday before D. Gordon broke it wide open. Breaks a scoreless tie with his second home run of the year, and the Mariners avoid the three-game sweep in Oakland. Finished the day now just 2.5 behind the A's instead of what would have been 4.5 in a complete disaster. What a game. Mike Leake, when they really needed him, pitched a gem. Goes 8 shutout innings, followed in by the bullpen. That is everything that the Mariners have been this year when they've been at their best, and that's why you got to keep the faith.
That's right. And that's why they're 70-52, Mike, and 18 games above 500, 2.5 back in the wild card, still within 4 of the Houston Astros. It's Mike Leake, it's Wade LeBlanc, it's Marco Gonzalez. Let's be very frank about this season. You're 122 games in, and you're in this spot because of the overachievement of your pitching staff. Edwin Diaz has exploded on the scene as the best closer in baseball, and those three aforementioned starters have given you more than any of us expected going into this season. Now, at some point, if your offense can do what was expected of them, if your offense can actually get hot and score an abundance of runs, combined with this pitching, you may just very well find yourself in the playoffs.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Rashad Penny, first-round running back from the Seahawks, underwent successful hand surgery yesterday in Philadelphia. I don't know why everybody has to go to Philadelphia to have surgery. Pete Carroll said he expects Penny to miss 3 to 4 weeks, which means he would be ready to play right around week one in Denver. So obviously this is not huge news. By all accounts, if they had been in the middle of the season and he was their top running back at the time, that he wouldn't need to have this surgery. But in practice like this, better to get him right and get him to be 100%. I still think he's going to be a major contributor this year, but I don't know whether it's going to be in the first half of the season. My expectation is that Chris Carson gets this thing going along with some of the other guys on this roster, and that by mid-year we start to see Rashad Penny come on.
Yeah, here's what you need to know. This team is 2 weeks away from making its cuts. Everybody in the NFL is. They're 2 weeks away from tonight to have to get their roster set over the final weekend. By my count, Mike, they have 5 legitimate practices left, not counting some of the walkthroughs, but that is it. That's all the workload that is left before the regular season begins. It is a bummer that Rashad will not be a part of that. He will not get some of that work in, some of the work that every single rookie needs. But if you're going to have any surgery and any injury, I think on a finger on your left hand would be about my number one choice.
He is a lefty.
To not impact him over the course of the season, even the regular season.
He is a lefty,
here in a few weeks. I understand that.
Careful.
Yeah, that's okay.
He's a lefty.
He'll be just fine. It was done beautifully.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Tough day for the Mariners today, but oftentimes that means roster moves could be coming. Here's 4 I would like to see go down. First of all, they need a starter for Paxton. I guess that could be Felix for one start. Second, they're going to need a starter for Marco Gonzalez. I think he needs to skip a start, and maybe that's going to be Christian Bergman. Maybe it's a trade. Maybe it's somebody else who's in the organization, but I would absolutely like to see him skip a start as well. Third, they got to get Ben Gamble back onto this roster. Better offensive player, certainly, than Heredia, and maybe he's not the brightest guy out there and makes some silly mistakes, but at this point, they need the offense more than they need Heredia. He'll be back in 15 days anyway for September 1st call-ups. And then finally, I just don't see any reason to keep Romine on this team for the next couple of weeks. Cano, Gordon, Healy, each have enough flexibility to cover whatever you need to do. Gordon can play short in a pinch. I just don't see the value of having an Andrew Romine on your team.
Yeah, can I second that on every one of those moves? I'm right there behind you, and Ben Gamble's gone down to Tacoma. Instead of pouting, instead of whining, he's hitting over 400 and playing some great defense. And yeah, it just gotten to a point, you know, the pitching staff, as I mentioned earlier, has overachieved at nearly every turn. You go through guys offensively, and outside of Gene Segura and Mitch Haniger, it is very difficult to find guys that have overachieved. Nelly's had a very nice year and has bounced back, and him being the Nelson Cruz that you would expect. Outside of that, it has been just about disappointment at every single other position offensively. And Ben Gamel is a guy that we know is produced and is producing some big moments for this team, and agreed. I would certainly like to see him on the 25-man.
All right, those are three things you need to know. Some text messages coming in, 710. Excuse me, 710, powered by Coors Light. Which do you think was less likely? Zanino walking and then D hitting a home run or sweeping the Astros? I'm going to go with the Zanino-D combo. I mean, Mike Zanino never walks. D never hits home runs. That's true. That is shocking.
That's true, but you've never won four in Houston either.
Right.
And that was against Verlander and against Cole and against Morton, right? I mean, that's the best rotation in baseball.
Text message. Beardless Nick Vincent is simply unacceptable. Yeah, I'm with you.
It's Titus, very hard time.
Get that goatee back.
But it's working for him.
Like, I know he's pitching well.
You only change it if it's not working.
But he looks like a different human. I'm not comfortable with this. The other Nick Vincent's sort of like, you know, a tough guy, and he comes in from the bullpen with some swagger. This Nick Vincent's like worming his way out there. I need his beard back. Where's the professor?
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
All right, so Rashad Penny has his surgery yesterday in his left hand. Is he left-handed or ambidextrous?
He's left-handed.
Okay. So what do we make of this? How serious will this be? Will it affect him this season, do you think?
No, it's going to be slow him down a little bit, and I'm sure maybe affect some carries at the beginning of the season, but it just, you know, valuable time there in training camp that he could be learning, you know, having three preseason games he can advance. But in the big picture, it's not as bad as Darius Geis, who got the ACL. It's not as good as Sonny Michel, who has a little knee procedure. So, no, it's one where it's a setback, but it's one that they can recover from. And I think everybody kind of realized going into the season it was going to be Chris Carson as the starter and Penny as the backup. They just now work him in a little bit slower, but he should be fine.
What do we know about the linebacker pass rusher Eric Walden the Seahawks signed yesterday?
Well, he was one of three pass rush linebacker types, defensive ends, that they brought in about a week ago Sunday. And I think that you know, he can maybe play strong side safety, strong side linebacker, and then maybe a little bit of pass rush, put his hand on the ground. But I think you can see that, you know, they've been looking for weeks to find some type of veteran guy that can come in, because remember, they're thin at defensive end. They don't know about Deion Jordan. You know, Marcus Smith has missed some time, and so they're a little thin there. So now they bring him in, and they're also thin at linebacker too. And so, you know, instead of getting like an Elvis Dumervil or a Connor Barwin, I mean, the choice was Eric Walden.
Brandon Marshall has sort of been this elusive figure, right? He shows up, and I don't think anybody was sure whether or not he was really even going to make the team. Where do you think he's at now? We haven't seen him in a game yet, but a lot of him in practice. Is he going to make this team?
I think he is, yeah. I think you can see that he's working well with Russell Wilson. I think you can see that you know, he'll get one or two real good pass catches every practice, and I think that he's advancing. I mean, the big thing still is just getting his legs right, because, you know, with the toe injury, the ankle injury, he's still recovering from that, and so he's still not full go, but even with if he's like at 80%, that 80% shows a lot. He's a big target. I mean, he's certainly going to be a big help in the red zone, and I'd say right now, you know, he's probably sitting at the number four spot for wide receivers.
Yeah, and actually, Salky, he was in with the ones. He didn't get a ball on that drive, but he was in on the opening drive last week with the ones, and he's been out here with the ones an awful lot. And I think if, John, he's healthy, he absolutely has a chance to make this team. Hey, speaking of health, how does Big Ben get knocked out of one of these practices in training camp?
Well, it wasn't a hit by a defensive player. Apparently, I guess he was trying to move in the pocket or move outside the pocket, and he crashed into Marcus Gilbert, and his head kind of just went quick and jerked. And so with that, he went to the ground. I mean, it wasn't immediately after the hit. I guess it was a couple plays later that he just kind of felt it. And so he gets under concussion protocol. So it was kind of just an accident more so than anything else. And it was with an offensive player, not a defensive player.
Is it just me, or is Aaron Rodgers like the pissiest he's ever been?
Oh, yeah. I think you can see there's an edge to him right now. And it goes back, I think, to Alex Van Pelt, the quarterback coach that he didn't want to see let go. It goes back to Jordy Nelson, who he didn't want to see let go. And so it's like, okay, I'm not getting my way here, but it's like I'll try to express my way on the field. And if I see the wide receivers not doing what I want, I'm going to yell at them. I'm going to call them out. And so, yeah, I think there's an edge to them this year.
Yeah, speaking of Edge, did you read all these Jalen Ramsey quotes on all these quarterbacks? He called Josh Allen trash. He said Matt Ryan was overrated. Now, he did have a lot of good things to say as well. He said nice things about Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and Deshaun Watson and Carson Wentz. Is he just playing the Richard Sherman handbook?
Well, I've been playing it to an even stronger degree because, you know, Richard's not going to be ripping as bad as that. I mean, he's going to say controversial things, and he's going to say whatever on his mind, but he's not going to, you know, call out players and call them trash and overrated and stuff like that.
I mean, he called Crabtree sorry, a sorry receiver.
Well, he said that Joe Flacco sucks.
Well, that's true. I mean, that was definitely – he one-upped Sherm, I guess.
I mean, he's got a strong opinion. He's a very strong, good cornerback, but I think he took it a little bit too far. You know, this story did come out when he's back in Jacksonville. Tom Coughlin and Doug Marrone are up in Minnesota in a dual practice with the Vikings. Could you imagine how Tom Coughlin had, when he first heard of this, how mad he was? I think
knew what they were getting. I mean, it's not like this was a change of personality. This is who he is.
Yeah, but did they realize it was going to be this wild? They probably didn't.
Hey, we're going to have Frank Clark on today. You had Clint Hurt, the D-line coach, on yesterday. You learn anything from Clint leading into our interview with Frank here in about 45 minutes?
Well, I think he feels good. I mean, you know, he's worked through the hand injury because, remember, he's had the hand problems going even back to last year. And I think I know that Clint was real happy that he's just back on the field and just kind of getting back in the football shape of things. And, you know, so much is expected because, you know, where you think he goes from a number three to a number one, usually with the 12 starts that he had last year, he really was the number two defensive end, and I think that he's ready for a big season, and I think that Clint feels he's going to have a big season.
Man, I don't know. He makes me more nervous than I think any other person on this team. Let's do a little wild card.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card.
Mr. Professor Clayton.
Yes.
If you had to have a themed birthday party next year, and it couldn't be football themed, what theme would you choose?
A themed birthday party? I don't know. I think probably what I would have is the theme. I would probably get into the funk, kind of a funk party, and you know, just have, you know, like play a lot of James Brown songs, mix in some Isley Brothers and stuff like that. I think if we're going to have a birthday party, we got to have the music right. And so the theme, I think, would have to be some good funk.
Get people to wear like clothing from the 70s?
I don't think so. No.
No.
Nah, if you're going to go all the way, right?
Well, let's put it this way. If it's going to be funk, it's going to be nice and relaxed, and it's like have people dress up and stuff like that.
You don't want them to dress like Parliament or something?
You couldn't imagine me, the Graz, Saul, Glitz, coming on over. Howdy to your place over there with a little funk music playing, all in costume, dressed in the 70s, 80s. You couldn't picture that?
It's
you wouldn't
hard.
Want that?
Yeah, I'm trying to picture you in kind of like that Parliament funkadelic type of look.
Put a big Afro wig on, Brock. Yeah.
Bell-bottoms, indoor
bell-bottoms. How about bell bottoms? White bell bottoms.
Bro, I'd go for it, JC.
How did you ever have a theme birthday party, or Lydia?
No theme birthday parties for me.
Never as a kid.
No.
Did they still have underoos when you guys were growing up?
No.
You guys should have grown up in the '80s. It was fun. John, thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, thanks.
All right, there you go. John Clayton with us every day at 7:15. You must add underoos, right, Brock?
I think we did. Yeah, but your buddy of mine, Steve Curran, had a pretty fun little themed birthday party the other day. One of his friends, and it was a party bus, and they were all dressed 80s style, and they hopped to a few different places, and it ended at the Hall & Oates concert.
Oh, wow.
Arena.
Nice.
Which he said was off the hook.
I bet it was. Yeah. Your kiss is on my list.
That's
man.
Right.
Let's
pretty,
go.
Pretty fun stuff.
Sarah Smile, let's go. Dig in. I mean, that's good, but it's not great. What a day. What a day that must have been. A lot of music on the show today. That's how we're feeling. Frank Clark's going to join us just past 8 o'clock. That's going to be fun. You know, a lot of football to talk today, Brock. I want to talk some more about Frank Clark because
we got to sort through this with you. Why?
You're going to have to. Yeah. I need some help. I need some help on Frank Clark before we talk to him.
I
think you can help me? Can you help me sort this out next?
I'll try.
All right, we'll do it. I'm Brock and Saul.
Little
all could have used a few pounds.
I know I'm supposed to do a show, but
tight pants, points, hollering now.
She's gonna play Bob Seger. I don't know if I can see.
She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes and points all her own, sitting way up high.
One of the better concerts I've ever seen, actually. Bob Seger, man, that guy can play. A lot of fun. Good morning. Hope you're having a good day. It's Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. We're going to be joined by Frank Clark coming up here in about half hour, 40 minutes, Brock.
Yes.
And I think that Frank has turned himself into one of the bigger stories on this team. And I don't know where he was exactly in our most intriguing Seahawks list that we did heading into the season, but if I were to recast that list, he would be in the top two or three to me.
I think he was. Wasn't he in the top five?
I don't remember.
Sure he was in the top five.
How can I remember these things? Come on. Give me a break. What do you think I am?
He was number four.
He was number four?
There you go. Yeah.
Oh, see, good research back there. All right. So he might even be number two if I were to do this again. Frank Clark is, in my view, I think unreliable. And maybe that word is too strong, so I can temper it and I can try to pull back from it a little bit, but he's got ridiculous talent. He's been banged up a little bit this year. He's been a pretty good citizen since coming here to Seattle. We haven't had anything major, certainly, like what he was accused of before coming. But he just feels a little bit unreliable to me, and so I'm trying to figure out, okay, why? Well, let me give you some reasons.
Okay.
One, he sucker-punched a teammate in one of the most violent acts I've ever witnessed in person.
That was pretty heinous.
He's got a
bad... It was jarring to see.
It was... I don't know, in a year, I haven't gotten over it. Both.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've gotten over it.
The jawing ended quickly. Oh. The jarring nature of it reverberates to this day.
There are just some things that once you see it, you can't unsee it. And I know that 99.9% of the fans didn't see it. There were a group that were there that day for training camp. But having seen it from, 30, 40 yards away, I don't know that I'll ever be able to unsee the image of him kind of sneaking over and just popping the dude straight in the jaw while he wasn't looking at him.
Yeah.
It was his teammate. I don't know that I'll ever fully be able to, and maybe I should. They have, obviously, they've moved on, but I don't know after having seen that. I haven't really seen anything since that, other than the fact that I know he's a charismatic guy and he's a good communicator and he comes on. He'll be interesting, I'm sure, when we talk to him.
Yeah.
But it's hard for me because I've seen that. I know his rap from college. I know he missed voluntary workouts this year. I know he had surgery late in the offseason instead of earlier. That's a bunch of strikes against for me.
I think all that's fair.
And they're balanced by incredible talent, incredible versatility to play against the run and the pass, to play inside and outside. A guy who, and I know this, he is a charismatic dude. And when he comes out here in a little bit, he's going to be easy to talk to. He's a really interesting, thoughtful, charismatic guy. And so I find myself very much in between on what to do with Frank Clark and his future salary.
And I'm looking at my little board right here, and in 3 years, he's got 22 sacks, right? Last year, a career-best 9 sacks, nearly a double-digit sack guy. And in this league, and on this team in particular, you have to have it. I mean, that's a 3-4-5 hitter. I would say that there is a legitimate comparison between Major League Baseball, and you've got to have somebody in the middle of your lineup that can do damage. You have to. You have to be good in today's baseball. And in the NFL, you have to rush your passer. I mean, you just time and time and time again, the teams that win it, maybe other than Tom Brady's teams, just about everybody else, you can go through the list, including the Seahawks when they won theirs, are right near the top of the sack list. You have to have that difference maker. And with Deion Jordan, the reason, Mike, he probably moves from number four to number two, if we knew now what we didn't know then about Deion Jordan with his stress fracture in his shin, that he's just going to be a no-go and may stretch even into the season. Frank Clark becomes more than just an intrigue. He becomes one of the most irreplaceable players on this roster.
He is. There's a bunch of text coming in here, 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Salk, so what you're saying is you think Frank Clark equals LeGarrette Blount. Not really. And for a couple of different reasons. One, he plays a significantly more important position. And two, Blount's offense came not against his teammate. There's something about, and maybe, I don't know, maybe it's different. Maybe it was just as bad because it was against a fan and this and that. I mean, there, and in some ways...
No, it was a defensive tackle. Yeah,
it was Byron Hout.
Yeah, it was.
Boise State. Exactly.
Who could ever forget? Right.
Yes.
I still have a scar on my hand from when we tried to recreate the LeGarrette Blount punch on video.
Correct.
And I accidentally punched
a console in there.
No, it's the a nameplate that was sticking out on the outside of the door.
That was so stupid.
I have a scar on my knuckle from it to this day. It was
what were we
bleeding
doing?
Bleeding so much.
What were we doing?
He punched his teammate.
Yeah.
Anyway, none of this is supposed to be a rip job on Frank Clark, even though I'm sure it sounds this way. What it's supposed to be is this. I think he can answer a lot of these questions, and I think he can determine whether or not the Seahawks give him a long-term deal this year, but it won't just be the way he plays. Mm. I honestly believe the way Frank Clark acts this year will have as much to do with his future and possibly even this team's success as how he actually plays out on the field. And it's hard with him because I know he's charismatic, and I know he can really sound like the perfect guy. And then you see some of the actions, and they don't always live up to the sound. But I think he can prove with the way he acts this year, off the field and around his teammates, can he be the bridge to this next group of guys, or is he going to be stuck in the Michael Bennett, Richard Sherman school of business? Because if he wants to be like those guys, I don't think he's a fit here.
Mm-hmm.
If he wants to be the leader of this new group of guys, and he wants to be like Bobby and KJ instead of like Sherman Bennett, I think there's a bright future ahead of Frank Clark, who's a talented guy and clearly a really smart dude as well. That's up to him.
Yeah, I think it's pretty fascinating on a number of levels. And as you know, Salk, I'm a wordsmith. I mean, that's part of what I do on a daily basis and on a broadcast. I've got to find words, and I think I got the perfect word that describes Frank Clark that kind of encapsulates everything that you just said over the last 5 minutes. And it really is his game. It's in his personality is kind of a personification of his game or vice versa, and that is volatile.
Mm-hmm.
He is a volatile guy. What we watched there with that violence last year in that fight was wow. It did. It just kind of, I can close my eyes and I'm, you know, we're 100 yards from it right now and I can just picture it so very clearly. It was just volatile. His game is volatile, man. You can't block him. It was KJ Wright. You talk to anybody out here. Like, first step, who was it the other day? Will Disley. Like, what's it like blocking these guys? He's like, oh,
Frank
Clark's a man. Yeah. Like, it's just his punch and his power is just. It's very unique. It's very volatile. And I think there might even be something to be said, like, does this team need a little bit of that volatility?
They might. It's a really good point.
You know, when they were great and on that rise to it, it wasn't just a bunch of say all the right things, do all the right things, just stay in line.
Yeah.
And Jalen Ramsey's, you know, taking Richard Sherman's calling card and making it explode. You need also a little volatility, a little bit of edge, a little bit of friction, a guy that makes you a little uncomfortable.
It's a good point.
Makes everybody a little bit uncomfortable.
It's a really good point. And I don't know how he is in Perth. I don't know what it's like to be around Frank Clark. I see the text coming in. They're all over the map on this. Frank Clark does have a bright future, but it's not going to be in Seattle. You've never gotten into a fight with a teammate? Well, not like that. No, I haven't. Sorry.
I've never knocked him flat on his back.
Salk, you're just being a wuss. Too bad if Fetty couldn't dodge the punch like he dodges his blocking assignments.
Well, if he'd known it was coming. I mean, good joke. The premise of the joke works.
If you had seen that he was looking in another direction and got clocked in the face, you would feel a little bit different.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'm hopeful that that some of those fears go unfounded by the end of this year.
Well, I think you said it right. His play will. It's not just about his play will dictate it, Mike. He's got to just compete and work. That I don't care kind of what side you're on, and that's if you want to cut through. Richard practiced his butt off. Those guys had an edge when this thing was humming. I mean, they love to work.
At the end, they stopped doing that. The end, Michael Bennett stopped doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of all those things, I mean, the one that that's going to bother me every single time is the fact that they skipped voluntary workouts.
Yep.
Yeah, I know they're voluntary. Shut up. They're workouts for your team to try to get better. They're an opportunity to make your team better, and he didn't think they were worth his time.
Yep.
And I can't help but have a problem with that. Yep. And you're never, ever in a million gazillion years going to convince me that that's not the wrong way to play things.
Yep.
Sorry. Like, if you want to be the number one guy on this team and get paid accordingly, then act accordingly. And part of the way you act accordingly is by showing up for all those workouts.
Yeah.
We will talk to him. We'll do it coming up here in about 20 minutes to a half hour. For everybody saying, Salk, I hope you're going to say every one of these things to his face. Like, yeah, I'm going to ask him about some of this. My job's to ask some questions. I'm not going to get into a fight with Frank Clark. But I do want to ask him about some of this because I think I'm curious to see how he wants to handle this stuff moving forward into the last year of his deal. So we'll talk to him coming up in about 20 minutes, a half hour. Before we do it, Coors Light's Blue 42 and a surprise name that is emerging in Seahawks camp. It's next on Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42. Blue 42.
All right, time for a little Coors Light's Blue 42 here on Brock and Saul. Frank Clark's going to join us here in about 15 minutes or so. In the meantime, got three good football questions for Brock. We do this daily at this time. Let's start here. Brock, which undrafted player has the best chance to actually make this team?
That'd be Puna Ford. 97 on the jersey, number one in my heart. Puna Ford, who Tom Wassel should have a lot of affinity for, because when you watch those guys come out and do their D-line drills, Puna is a good, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 inches shorter. He's listed at 5'11", 310 pounds. He's got some long arms. He's a pretty violent dude. I was looking at Pro Football Focus's grades. Again, I always like to kind of use their grades, my own eyes, and see how they measure up. And they had him as one of the better run stuffers in that opening game of the exhibition season, which is exactly what he did, as he was the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. Mike, I look at this list, and I don't really see anybody else. You know, over the years, undrafted free agents, the Doug Baldwins, the Jermaine Curses, the Thomas Rawls became pretty prominent stories. I don't know if I can even find another one that I feel like could play a legitimate role this season. I think Puna's got a chance to make this team. We'll see whether or not he can ever get on the field, if there's injuries to Jaron or Tom or Shamar or Nas or any of those guys. But outside of that, I really am hard-pressed. Maybe one of the backup linebackers because of special teams, Emmanuel Beal, or you know, somewhere along those lines. But outside of that, I think it's going to be very hard for an undrafted free agent to crack this roster.
His defensive line coach, Clint Hurd, on with John Clayton yesterday, had a lot of nice things to say about him.
He does. You know, his initial quickness is outstanding, but he is a leverage freak. Not everybody that is short like he is plays with great leverage. He's an excellent knee bender. He can anchor. He's physical. Very, very smart guy, understanding where the football is going. He's been outstanding and really good with shedding blocks and whatnot, so been pleasantly surprised with him. We felt like we got a diamond in the rough, and we got him. We've been happy since he's been here.
That's pretty cool. Also mention him first when listing some of the defensive linemen on this team, so maybe he will make it after all. Question number two. What's the one word every football coach at the NFL level, and even more at the college football level, have to be able to answer?
Why? You have to be able to answer for a player, for someone around the program. You have to answer why. Why are you doing this way? And Tommy and I yesterday, Wassel, had a fun discussion about the culture of college football. And he brought it up with the NFL level and some of the craziness you're seeing on Hard Knocks with these coaches that are just obnoxious, where there's still a fear and a dog cussing and intimidation that runs the show. But you know, the more that I've been around this game over the last decade or so, especially at the collegiate level, you have got to be able to answer the question both to the higher-ups in your building and certainly with the younger players of today of why. Why are we going about training this way? Why are we going about running this scheme? Why are you asking me to do these two-a-days? Why are you asking me to commit to this sleep cycle and this nutrition? Why? And instead of, like, you know, kind of diminishing this generation of player, I think the good ones, and Nick Saban and Chris Peterson include on that list, and put Dabo Sweeney near the top, understand, yeah, I've got to be able to answer why to parents, to recruits, to players, to boosters, to my AD, even to the presidents of these universities, why we're going about it the way we are. A hard lesson learned right now, I think, at the University of Maryland as well.
All right, question number three. We're just about to break camp here for the Seahawks. Who have been some of the more pleasant surprises and maybe some of the disappointments?
Yeah, let's start on the Lydia side of things, the George Michael side of things, the happy side of things. And let's just pay off the Shaquem Griffin story. I know that I'm going to do a better job of that come Saturday night on the broadcast. That, you know, he really has been more than just a story. He's been a phenomenal player that is, I think, gaining more and more trust in the program. Justin Coleman's had a tremendous camp. If you want to talk about paying people and who's deserving of maybe a deal and who's that bridge guy and into the next, you know, kind of core players, I think Justin Coleman's had an excellent camp. I love Dwayne Brown and the way that he's working, Mike, every single day. He did get rewarded. He did get paid. But I think all of those guys are pretty pleasant surprises. And obviously, Stringfellow and Marshall are the two I've talked about nonstop over the last 3 weeks. On the flip side, it's Deion Jordan. And I think right there, unfortunately, with him is Ed Dixon. and two guys, and probably Ed even a little bit more with Deion. With Deion, you kind of knew that this was the track record in the past. He just has such a hard time ever practicing. That's not the case for Ed Dixon, man. That guy's been in the league a long time. He has posted for the majority of his career, and to have a quad, a groin, just to have a soft tissue injury that occurred somewhere between after the OTAs and into training camp that has knocked him out for the entirety of it, especially with Will Dissly and Nick Vannette and guys that could really utilize him on the field, this offense for that matter. That's been a bit of a disappointment, a bummer.
CJ Procise, Samara Darbo.
Yep. Yeah. It was good that CJ got back on the field yesterday. He's going to have to play Saturday. And you know what? With the injury now to Rashad Penny, every opportunity for CJ to show something over the next 3 weeks.
All right, there you go. Those are three football questions, Brock, every day at 7:45. Football questions got to answer the why now, huh? That's what coaches have to answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think more than ever. In my years, you just didn't, you know, we practiced on a practice field, Mike. We all got rashes.
Right.
Like the old practice field of Washington before the indoor facility because of the goose poop. Like we would get these like rashes on our shins. Like, what is this? Well, just practice. Just shut up and just go practice. Is this from like the geese poop out here? Is this like landfill? Why am I getting this rash?
It's fine. Don't even worry about it. You know why, exactly right. Because you know what you had to have back in the day? They have faith back in the day. Now everybody's questioning the coaches, questioning the Mariners, questioning whether they can score in the 12. You just have to have faith.
Is it sad that I didn't even know that version was done? Is that how sad?
No, it's very, very
in fact,
happy
it's
for
kind
you.
Of fortunate.
No, yes, that is sad. Happy.
Is it sad?
You
or?
Didn't know that Limp Bizkit no. did a version of Faith.
I had no idea. I really had no idea.
You didn't know that Fred Durst and Limp Bizkit broke through with their version of Faith?
I did not know that.
Before they came back with Nookie and everything else?
Well, I guess it would be nice. I did not know that. So thankful that I can learn something.
See the way I hit the hook there? Or hit the post? Hit the post.
Like
a radio DJ. It's Fred Durst and Limp Bizkit coming in with Faith this week at number 24. Frank Clark's going to join us coming up in a couple minutes.
Have some faith on Frank, would you?
I'm going to.
Have some faith that the guy's going to deliver this year, crying out loud. Such a worry.
I have a lot of faith for what he's going to do
on
the field.
Such a worry word.
I have a lot of faith for him on the field. A lot of faith in him on the field. Curious to talk to him. Frank Clark's going to sit down with us in a couple minutes here on Brock and Salk. 710 ESPN, Seattle. Gotta have faith. Gotta have faith. Gotta have faith.